A powerful new documentary premieres at Sundance, and it tells a Jacksonville story. We'll share that story with you just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in on this chilly morning. Hope your day's off to a good start. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio, and we are also now a daily podcast on iTunes. Subscribe to that podcast, download us anytime. Just ahead, don't miss it, because we'll speak with the father of Jordan Davis. Ron Davis will share his thoughts about the new film, 3.5 Minutes. You can get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, it's a national expert joining the program as she discusses how to improve girls' self-esteem and how technology plays a role. Plus, the music of local band Jackson Vegas and all this weekend's events, all of that ahead. But first this morning, it is the new documentary that examines the shooting death of Jacksonville teen Jordan Davis at the hands of Michael Dunn.
Maybe they didn't have a gun, but he thought they had a gun.
They think it's a gun when it's in the hands of a young African-American.
Trayvon Martin's father texts me, "I just want to welcome you to a club that none of us want to be in."
It's going to be open season.
Open season. You can say later that maybe he did have it.
It's time to pick up where Dr. King left off.
I've never covered a trial with this much international attention.
The new film, 3.5 Minutes, just had a successful premiere at the Sundance Film Festival. And the story takes viewers back to Black Friday of 2012, when four local African-American teenagers stopped at a Southside gas station to buy gum and cigarettes. One of them, Jordan Davis, got into an argument with Michael Dunn, a white man parked beside them. It was over the volume of music playing in the kid's car. The altercation turned to tragedy when Dunn fired 10 rounds at the unarmed boys, killing Davis almost instantly. Now, the new film explores the controversy around Florida's Stand Your Ground laws by weaving the Michael Dunn trial here in Jacksonville, actually there were two of them, with a chorus of citizen and pundit opinions, and with Jordan's parents and their experiences in and out of the courtroom. This morning, we begin the hour with a closer look, and we take your calls. We are pleased to welcome back to the studio Ron Davis, Jordan Davis's father. Ron, good morning.
Good morning.
Great to see you. And also with us, Jacksonville attorney John Phillips, who represents the family. John, thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure.
And right now, we want you to give us a call with your thoughts about the new film, 3.5 Minutes. It just had its debut at the Sundance Film Festival. Give us a call right now. 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect, email and tweet the show, and we also welcome your comments on Facebook. Ron Davis, let's begin with you. You just got back from Utah, and it's my understanding the film had a very positive reception. Can you share with us what happened out there?
Yes, the premiere was on Saturday the 24th, and we had a packed house and standing room only. And it was just the first time that I've seen the film with live audience, with people that are in the, you know, in the audience, and hundreds of them. It was so emotional. We only had seen maybe 70% of the film as a rough cut, you know, prior to that. So this was new to me also. And the people there, they just loved it. They got it. They understood. They felt Jordan Davis through the eyes of his parents, also the eyes of his girlfriend, and also the eyes of his friends. And so the reviews were just fabulous.
As Jordan's dad, I would think watching your son's life and details about your son that maybe only you and his mother knew, having that told on the big screen, what was that like emotionally for you?
Well, you know, you would look around at people to see what their expressions were. And when you start seeing some of the emotional, it's a tearjerker, really, but most of the film, and you would see people just dabbing their eyes, and you see handkerchiefs are coming out. And you know that people understood that Jordan was a great young man, and he was a lot of Jordans in this world. You know, he wasn't just our son. We were basically portraying a lot of the youth that are in this world that lose their lives because of this type of violence. And so they understood that.
549-2937, as we speak with Ron Davis and John Phillips about the new documentary, 3.5 Minutes. And John Phillips, I'm sure one of the reasons the filmmakers decided to tell this story is because, as Ron says, Jordan became a symbol in the eyes of many for other kids around this country, and also a symbol of the different perceptions people have when it comes to issues of race and the criminal justice system.
That's exactly right, Melissa. It's, you know, the young black boy in this country doesn't often get the benefit of the doubt, especially when they're getting pulled over or when there's an argument with an older white male. We see it all too often. And even in this case, and it's easy for the listeners out there to understand now who Jordan is, more so with how it's evolved. But that very first week, that very second week, Dunn's people beat us to the media, and they were portraying Jordan as a gangbanger and as having this shotgun that we heard about years later that's never, ever, ever turned up because it never, ever, ever existed. And so it's, you know, it's playing on those stereotypes that they did, which is why I was even ever involved. And, you know, it's unfortunate that this family has had to have an attorney for a couple of years. But fortunately, now that my work's done, I'm, you know, I'm with the Jordan Davis Foundation and as a friend more than anything.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Ron Davis, can you tell us a little bit about the Jordan Davis Foundation?
Yes, we decided that for us to have a legacy for Jordan, we have to help some of these young men that are out here in school. Like, we first went to Wolfson High School and presented them with two scholarships, actually, in December, one a music scholarship and also an academic scholarship. And we'll do that on an annual basis. And then we'll also include other schools in the community across Jacksonville. And the reason why we do this is because Jordan always said to me, "Dad, you know, a lot of schools don't give us money or anything to go on school trips and stuff like that." And he said, "When you were young, did you go on school trips?" And I said, "Yeah, in New York, we went to Philadelphia, we went to Washington, you know." And the budget in these schools, they don't have the budget to take the kids out of their neighborhood, to let them see something else positive. So with the Jordan Davis Foundation, we're going to also take maybe 10 kids at a time to Washington and places like that, so they can see something outside of their neighborhood and understand about city government, state government, and also federal government.
That's great to hear. I'm curious, as this film seeks distribution, people around town will be curious to see it. Can you, without giving all of it away, I mean, we know how the story ends, but what else is in the film? Can you tell me a little bit more about what we'll see?
It's going to show that it's going to be some humor in the film, because it's going to show the person that Jordan was. One thing that's really going to catch you in the film, that he thought he could play basketball.
And what, he wasn't that good?
And he wasn't, really wasn't that good. And his friends are going to really tell on him in the film, you know, about his prowess or lack thereof, you know. And the other thing is that the love of his family, you're going to see a lot of love in the film from his family, and also his girlfriend, who, you know, she was deeply affected. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, we don't talk about that when you have his first and only girlfriend and how it affected her. And so you're going to see that in the film, and you're going to also see a docudrama about a courtroom. It's very rare that you get the courtroom angles that this director got, because of the fact that they had cameras in the courtroom and were able to get things that you normally don't see in the courtroom.
And if you're just joining us right now, we're speaking with Ron Davis, father of the late Jordan Davis of Jacksonville, about the powerful new documentary 3.5 Minutes. It tells the story of Jordan Davis's shooting death at the hands of Michael Dunn. Dunn, of course, is now serving a life sentence after two trials here in Jacksonville, watched by the nation. We will go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. John Phillips, when it comes to courtroom drama, of course, you've spent a lot of time in courtrooms. Can you share with us a little bit about that aspect?
You know, it features largely the role of John Guy, and words cannot thank him enough for his efforts here. You know, these state attorneys, especially guys like John, who have spent their entire career fighting for victims.
He prosecuted Mr. Dunn.
Correct. And you have a film that's kind of based upon a trial, but it's so beautiful. One thing that I talked to Mark with is they rented a helicopter and got some of the best shots of Jacksonville I've ever seen in my entire life. And it is about Jacksonville and this guy coming into Jacksonville and tearing up the fabric of our town for a little while.
How does Jacksonville come off in this movie?
You know, Corey Strola, they play Corey Strola's clip of Jacksonville having the distinction of being the murder capital of Florida. But, you know, by the end, the viewer sees that it's also the justice capital of Florida, that the process does work, that people do care.
Ron, would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And also, it's, you know, when people give you a distinction like the murder capital, I mean, you know, what we need to know is in law enforcement in Jacksonville, are they doing their job? That's what we need to know, you know. And I know through this whole ordeal that I've had for over 2 years, JSO has been in our corner the whole way. You know, we've gotten so much support. They made sure Detective Musser worked overnight, you know, and him and his partner, and they made sure that, and Detective Oliver, they made sure that Michael Dunn didn't have a chance to stash a gun or do anything like that. They actually went down there, picked him up, brought him back to Jacksonville. The prosecutors got an indictment within 48 hours. So everything law enforcement could do for Jordan Davis, they did for one of their own.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment. What are your questions for Ron Davis about the new film, 3.5 Minutes? It just premiered to acclaim at Sundance. 549-2937. You know, guys, just the other night here at WJCT, we had a town hall event hosted by our own Al Letson, Race in the River City, and strong opinions were shared. By the way, that program will air on TV on February 12th. When it comes to issues of race and the criminal justice system, the whole idea was to have a frank conversation without fear of anyone being put off. People were encouraged to be really blunt and honest about their opinions. But I'm just curious to get your thoughts about that, because as you both just said, you felt that when it came to getting justice for Jordan Davis, that the system worked.
The system did work. It took extraordinarily longer.
And do you believe that's because the victim was a young African-American teen, male?
I do. And it's, you know, I'm a guy from, there was, you know, a white guy born in South Alabama. And in this, you know, Ron and I have traveled in D.C. and New York City and everywhere else. And I've seen it firsthand. I didn't, you know, you hear about racism and you hear about, you know, prejudice, and you just kind of block it out. And you don't think that it really is that big of a deal. But when you walk with a family, you see it. And it's, you know, we've all got to open our eyes to what's going on. And that's, you know, one of the most powerful things Ron and Lucy did question and answer sessions after each film. And Ron had everybody acknowledge that racism is taught, prejudice is taught, and had everybody raise their hand and vow to not teach that anymore. And it, you know, it was a sob moment.
Ron.
That's correct. You know, in addition, you know, in the court system also, you have racism, and also you have cronyism. That's what I call it, because, you know, you can't expect that the police, you know, to really prosecute themselves and have the prosecutor prosecute policemen. I think that somebody from the outside always need to come in. For instance, here's something that came up. Police Chief Classy over in Atlantic Beach. You know, he had all these drug charges, had about 16 drug charges, would carry a minimum mandatory 3 years prison sentence. So had that been me or you, Melissa, we would have been in prison, you know. But all of a sudden they drop all these charges and allow him to plead guilty to charges that he's not even going to serve jail time whatsoever. And you're going to tell me that's not cronyism? You know, you have 16 charges reduced and his fine is $11,000. That's cronyism, you see. And that's what the public sees that, and they know that had it been them that they would be off to prison. And so if you're going to have trust within the community and trust within the law enforcement, mm-hmm. then you have to stop doing things like that, making those side deals, those backroom deals. You have to go ahead and treat everybody the same if you're a criminal.
And as you pointed out, too, it's a complicated picture. A moment ago, you noted when it came to aggressively hunting down Michael Dunn and prosecuting him, you were thrilled with how JSO handled that.
Right.
The controversy, John, came in the jury deliberations. That's really why this case, I think, continued to stay in the national mindset.
And I, you know, I don't really blame it's not the jury's fault. They're armed with a jury instruction that includes a subjective standard and includes the language stand your ground.
Yeah.
And so now we're trying to judge this from what did Michael Dunn believe, whether it was realistic or not. And that caused a lot of the problem. The first trial, the second trial, there was a lot more emphasis to, you know, to humanize Jordan Davis and show him as the kid with the silly Burton pom-pom hat, you know, and go further there. And I'm going to go a step further with it, Melissa. As of right this second, Michael Dunn has extra protection that nobody on death row has, and that is the Department
of Corrections. What does he have?
The Department of Corrections is keeping his whereabouts a secret. It's Harrell and Michael Dunn who for whatever reason are off the grid, and we don't understand that. Even Angela Corey does not know where Michael Dunn is currently housed.
What's the rationale?
The DOC says that it's to protect Michael Dunn's safety, and I'd say, well, what about the death row inmates? You know, there's never any high profile criminal. We've always known what facility there is. It my gosh, if they're not safe in a high profile prison, you know, they're threats from the inside, and they know who they are. But it's that's the problem, and that's what creates more doubt for people like Ron. You know, that say, well, all I want to know is that he's sleeping in a prison bed in Florida.
And we have calls coming in now as we discuss the new film, 3.5 Minutes, telling the story of Jacksonville's Jordan Davis, 549-2937. Omar on the west side. Go ahead, Omar. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Melissa. I didn't expect to come in on that note. My goodness, I didn't know Michael Dunn has disappeared, just dropped off the map. The reason why I was calling.
Yeah, I don't think any of us knew that till just now. Go ahead, Omar.
Right. Yeah, the reason why I was calling earlier at the beginning of the trial, I had called you before and let you know that no jury will convict a white man for killing a black person. And they didn't. And they had the trial again and have a second trial for that. But I just wanted to call and remind you. I had called you at the beginning of the trial and told you.
That's Omar on the west side. Thanks, Omar. Ron, what do you think about that?
Yeah, Omar, it's a historic moment in the South for a mostly all-white jury with 7 white men on the jury to convict a white man for killing a black kid. But it's just to show you that, you know, if you touch the hearts and the minds of the jurors and they look past race, that we can be a better country, a better system. And so we can stop worrying about whether the jury is all white or the jury is all black or whatever the case may be. If people just start taking a note from that jury that convicted Michael Dunn, and as you know, we heard later on that they said they just looked at the facts of the case and listened to the testimony. And they said, regardless of the race of the individual that was killed, regardless of the race of the person that did the killing, we just looked at the facts of the case. And that's what you hope all your jurors would start doing. And I just think that's a great test case, and Jacksonville should be proud of that, that here in the South that they got a conviction the way it should have been.
Comments coming in on Facebook. I'd like to commend Ron and Lucia for working to make some sense of this tragedy. As part of the local activist community, we'll continue to work to foster better understanding and seek justice for the victims of violence. And here's another one. I'd like to offer an apology to Mr. Davis for a society that created the man that killed your son. And he says, and I mean that. And let's go back to your calls right now as we speak with Ron Davis, the father of Jacksonville's Jordan Davis, about the new Sundance documentary, 3.5 Minutes. The number to join the show is 549-2937. We'll go back to your calls in just a moment. John Phillips, as you talk about this around town, it's been a while now since this all concluded. And the film kind of brings it back into the national consciousness. How important do you think that is?
I think it's very important. You know, it's from day one, you know, we've been on a train, and we've said that the only people that are coming on our train are those that are going to keep Jordan in a positive light. And Mark Silver has not only done that, but he's showing the trials and tribulations that this family underwent.
And the tagline, I'm looking at the card you guys brought in. The tagline is "When loud music turns deadly."
Yes,
the whole thing sparked up because of music that mm-hmm. these teens were playing or right. blasting out of their car,
right.
And there was a lot of discussion about that at the time.
Yeah, so Melissa, you know, the thing that the film is going to show is this, that there was a gentleman that pulled up beside the children, and he heard the loud music, and he pulled into another parking spot. He made the right decision. In other words, if something bothers you and you can retreat and you can just leave it, and it doesn't hurt you to do that, and you retreat safely, you know, you go home to your family. Well, Michael Dunn pulled into the same spot next to the kids. And 3.5 minutes later, he has lost his life in addition to my son losing his life. And so that shows you, and that's why we have 3.5 minutes. That this tells you in 3.5 minutes how Michael Dunn made a decision that ruined two lives.
And you mentioned retreat, Ron. John Phillips, the whole controversy stems from the statute that tells Floridians you no longer have a duty to retreat if you feel threatened. That was the whole case in Mr. Dunn's defense. He argued that he felt threatened and that he did not feel he had a duty to retreat.
That's exactly right. Stand Your Ground took the Castle Doctrine, where we all are at home and have no duty to retreat from our home to the streets. We can, you know, now the lack of duty to retreat has been sold and packaged with fear, and stories of college co-eds who are, you know, sexually assaulted, or little old ladies who are being attacked, which just doesn't happen very often. And so now it's forget reason, forget trying to discuss, forget, you know, not jumping to conclusions and shoot your way out of situations. And now people are getting killed over placement of garbage and pizza deliveries and everything else.
549-2937. Let us know your thoughts about Stand Your Ground and the new film 3.5 Minutes. Chuck at the Beaches. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hi, I'm very sorry for the gentleman's loss. Very, very sorry. But I did want to remind your caller who called in and said that young black men can't win in the court system. I would like to remind him of an Academy Award nominated winner film also in regards to Brenton Butler. We had a black sheriff, and that young man was found not guilty. I know a juror who was on that case, and she said the court system was ridiculous. The young man should have never been charged, and that jury found that young black man not guilty. And we had a black sheriff at the time who prosecuted him. And I'm very grateful that we have a black sheriff. I think it's wonderful that we have a black mayor. I think we've made a lot of progress. But please remember, and it's not always true and it doesn't always happen, but in the Brenton Butler case, they made the right decision.
And that was Pat McGinnis's case. He was the public defender and did a fantastic job.
Thanks, Chuck, for that
defending Brenton.
Yeah, and I'm just referencing back to that case, Brenton Butler, 15-year-old Jacksonville kid charged with murder, confessed. During the trial, he said his confession had been coerced. He was later acquitted, and it did spark that award, that Oscar-winning documentary, Murder on a Sunday Morning. So now here we have another documentary coming out of Jacksonville about a very similar type of, not exactly the same type of story. But again, we have another documentary focusing on the local criminal justice system and one kid's story.
And what you're going to see in the documentary is also that had Michael Dunn, after shooting initially into the car of children, had he sat there and dialed 911, Melissa, instead of running to the back of the car and shooting at a fleeing car, Michael Dunn probably would be walking out of the courtroom today. He probably would be, you know, having pizza and that rum and coke that he had. He'll probably be doing that today, because basically his actions after shooting into the car is what convicted him. You don't dial 911. When you drive out the driveway of the Gate gas station, there's the policeman right in front of you. Instead of you hailing that policeman down, you drive away, you go to your hotel. You know, you still don't dial 911.
There was a police cruiser right there?
There was a police cruiser right across the street.
DUI stop. DUI stop ongoing.
See, so you had a policeman right there. So you can't say you feared for your life and you didn't know what to do and everything. And then on the way, testified by his girlfriend, on the way to the hotel, two more policemen were coming because they were called to the scene. And you passed them also. And then when you hear that you killed Jordan Davis the next morning, then what do? Do you call 911 and explain it? Say, yeah, you know, these kids threatened me? No. What you do is pack up and you drive 2.5 hours down the road until you are caught. You know, and so his actions after that, that's what convicted
that's
him.
That's what ended in the conviction. And so let me then ask both of you, for those that have been listening and are curious, how likely is it that this film will attain distribution and that a bigger audience can see it?
It'll get here. You know, as I told everybody, if they tell us we have Jordan Davis Day coming up February 6th, if they told we could screen it privately, my office would pay for whatever it took to have people come. We're going to get it here as soon as possible. The question is whether it's premiered on, you know, HBO or in art houses or in major theaters. That's up to the producers.
That's got to be gratifying for you, Ron.
It is. It's because Jordan's legacy is to make sure people understand and change some minds of people that racism is taught, and that you can't go around murdering, shooting at kids and expect that the stand your ground statue is going to protect you. I think Corey Stroller in the film says that Michael Dunn was wrapped with the flag of stand your ground. You know, a lot of people think, you know, because of the Trayvon Martin situation where George Zimmerman got off for killing a kid, is that, you know, we could do the same thing. You know, people are copycats. I don't care what you say. If you look at the history of killers, the history of things that people do, they copy other people. And so in this case, we did not want people to copy Michael Dunn's action, which is, any situation, whether it be an argument or whatever it is, that you can take out your gun and shoot people dead. And it doesn't matter whether you shot a black kid, whether you shot a white kid, whether you shot an Asian kid, it doesn't matter. You shot somebody just because of a conversation.
Always great to see you both. And thanks for coming and spending a few minutes with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Our pleasure. Thank you.
And we were joined by Ron Davis and John Phillips about the new film, 3.5 Minutes. Much more still ahead later. The new sound of local band Jackson Vegas. Don't miss that. Plus The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. And up next, Growing Great Girls, how technology is affecting your daughter's self-esteem. As a national expert speaks in town, that's next.
Our thoughts are actual matter, just like our skin and this couch.
This is Amanda, who says she can feel what other people feel, literally, physically feel it.
And I think our thoughts have a ripple effect.
On the next episode of Invisibilia, we look at entanglement, the surprising ways we are all interconnected. Join us for Invisibilia from NPR.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Jack Miles reflects on religion and secularism after having edited the new Norton Anthology of World Religions. The anthology collects ancient primary texts from Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism. Miles is a former Jesuit seminarian and author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, God, a Biography. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Spend some time in the Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Well, she's an internationally renowned psychologist, author, and consultant. And today, Dr. Catherine Steiner-Adair is in Jacksonville on behalf of the First Coast Girls Initiative. She will keynote a very important workshop looking at the implications of technology and communication on a girl's self-esteem. She's also the author of The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. This is a topic all parents need to listen to. Dr. Steiner-Adair, it's a pleasure. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
You know, as the mother of two daughters, I'm especially interested in hearing what you have to say. Now, of course, several groups are involved in bringing you to town, including the Pace Center for Girls. Can you, let's begin with the title of your book, The Big Disconnect. What does that mean?
Well, it's a paradox in a way, this digital moment in time, because never before have we been able to connect to our friends, the people we love, the entire world 24/7. And yet at the same time, it looks like we're really losing touch with one another in some very essential ways.
Such as?
Well, you know, this is the first generation of kids, teens, tweens, to prefer texting to talking. And they're in touch all the time, and they love texting, and a text can go on and on and on. However, when we text, we eliminate one of the most essential forms of human communication and relationships. And that's the ability to hear the tone of voice that goes along with the actual word. So, you know, just at the age where girls in particular used to talk on the phone for hours and hours and hours and develop empathy and mm-hmm. the ability to read social cues and really tune into one another, texting can lead to that, but it also can lead to tons of drama.
Oh, yeah, and there's already plenty of that to go around, and you're saying screen time, screen media is exacerbating that for our girls.
It does. I mean, let's also not forget it enables girls to communicate and connect in so many wonderful ways, but when it's bad, it can get really bad. And some of that just has to do with neurologically how we interact with texting and screens, because the anonymity emboldens us to be mean. We lose our filters. Our empathy goes down. We become much more quick to react negatively or aggressively.
And how does this impact girls as opposed to boys?
Well, girls do a lot more of their relationship building and breaking down through digital communication than boys do. Boys play games, boys connect, boys are goofy. They can be really mean online too, but we see the girls spend more time, particularly in middle school, on Instagram. And, you know, they do the same kinds of things girls have always done, but the digital domain, it's can be a nastier sandbox because you say things on texting or text things that you wouldn't say face-to-face.
Right. And it's such a delicate time for girls as they're trying to navigate this just really difficult transition into adolescence. This can cut both ways. And so it affects not just the girl, but the entire family, I would think, as well. Do you look at that as well?
Of course, I do look a lot at really what it's like to be a child growing up in the digital age. And what was really surprising to me, I interviewed over 1,000 children between the ages of 2 and 30, and they all talked, each in their own way, about how hard it is to get your mom or dad's attention.
Right, because parents are buried in their phones.
They are.
Yeah,
they are.
And that's not good either.
Well, it's kind of tricky.
No, not at
yeah.
all. So... Okay, so many families now limit screen time for their kids, and my parents probably, and I'm sure our household is guilty of this too. We need to do a better job of limiting it among adults. When families make an effort to do that, do they see a positive effect?
There's a huge positive effect, and one of the recommendations, there are a lot of recommendations in the book, but one thing I do suggest is that you sit down as a family and talk about what works best for you? How do you want to protect really good quality family time, whether you're on a vacation or it's an ordinary school day? And there are some times where kids really need their parents more than others. And at those times, it's better to be off your own device as a mom or a dad. You know, one of the suggestions I make is just get up a half hour earlier, hard as that is.
Uh-huh.
But do all your email then, because it's pretty stressful for kids, no matter how old they are, getting out the door to school. And they really need your undivided attention.
What other advice do you have for parents, particularly parents of girls?
Well, you know, this is a hard thing to get going if you're changing behavior, but it can really make a big difference in how close your girl is to you. And that is a simple thing, which is just deciding that your car rides, especially to and from school, are going to be screen-free for everybody. Mm-hmm. That means your daughter doesn't have to listen to the annoying sound of you having half a conversation or listen to you on Bluetooth, which is really irritating and stressful for anybody, especially kids. But it also means that instead of texting her friends, her daughter's much more likely to give you the download of what happened at school today.
What is the most commonly asked question you get from parents? And when you talk to girls, what are the most common kind of pieces of feedback they give you?
Well, parents really want to know, at what age is it appropriate to give a child a smartphone? Or what's the right amount of time, you know, of playing games during a week? And, you know, there aren't really prescriptive answers to that. The questions really lead to other questions like, why am I doing this? Why would you give an 8 or 10-year-old a smartphone with absolutely no filters and total access to the mm-hmm. World Wide Web? And one of the things I come across a lot in the research I do, I consult to schools around the world, but particularly in America, parents aren't putting appropriate filters in their kids' phones and laptops through middle school. So they don't often realize sometimes that their kids can, you know, Google search a recipe for cupcakes and end up discovering a lady named Cupcake.
Exactly. And middle school really is the treacherous time, isn't it?
Middle school now is a very vulnerable time for kids, just in the world they're growing up in the digital age. And it's much harder, really, to even keep track of kids if you don't put the time into understanding where they're going online and really make it safe for your children to say, oh, I got in this really awful, you know, argument today online, or I went to this really creepy website. There's a chapter in the book about ways parents need to really stay calm and approachable and be informed in talking to their kids, not freak out.
What do you think of the decision some parents make to just no TV, no computer, no phone, no digital access at all?
Well, I think that, you know, again, that's really depends on where you live and the circumstances of your family, your school, your community. I think it makes life easier, certainly, for parents, especially if they do that Sunday night through Friday. The school week is about academics and playing outside and doing your homework and using technology for school-related stuff. One of the things that parents report is they get to really tedious, repetitive arguments with their kids. Can I have an hour on Minecraft? Oh, can I have an hour and a half on Minecraft? I've done all my homework. Can I get on Minecraft? And we see kids, you know, racing through their homework during the school week to play computer games. So I think that, you know, on the other hand, on really good educational computer games, if your child has extra time and they've done some good reading and all their homework, playing a very good computer game is intellectually more stimulating and more challenging than watching trash TV.
Yeah, it is a double-edged sword. It's TV always has been, and now the digital world is too.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it is so fascinating to get your thoughts about this, and it will be a very lucky audience when they come and hear you speak today in Jacksonville. We are so thrilled to have this time with you, and we thank you so much for being with us. Enjoy your time here.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And we just spoke now with Dr. Catherine Steiner Adair. She is the author of The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. The First Coast Girls Initiative is hosting their annual Growing Great Girls Workshop today, featuring Dr. Steiner Adair. And we're back in a moment.
Travel back in time with Radio Theater, Doo-Wop Revival, The Great American Songbook, and Juke Joint. Throwback Sundays, Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJZT. Looking forward to looking back.
Chances are you remember where you were when prosecutors released the verdicts about Michael Brown and Eric Gardner. When grand juries cleared police of wrongdoing in their deaths, the nation responded with protests, finger-pointing, and questions. I'm State of the Reunion host Al Letson. Join WJCT for an open and honest discussion that brings issues of race and justice to the forefront with the hopes of understanding and change. Race in the River City, February 12th at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
Join us tonight at 11 p.m. for Lost in the Stacks, a collaboration between Jacksonville Public Library and WJCT. We will be mining the library's collection for rare tracks and forgotten albums.
Yeah, there's plenty of snow in the Northeast right now, but that's not doing much for parched ski resorts out west.
And a lot of folks that said, hey, Joe, you're a nice guy, but geez, we'll never have snowmaking in our mountains because, you know, we actually have too much snow, are now circling back.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, making snow in a drought-stricken world, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, a big release party is set for Saturday night at Downtown's Underbelly. Grant Nielsen is here now with a preview of the first EP out this weekend from Jackson, Vegas. Hey, Grant, good morning.
Howdy.
Congrats, by the way.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about Jackson, Vegas.
So, well, the band's been around for a number of years now, and I've been kind of juggling this new project with a number of other things that I've been fortunate enough to plug here on this show and other elsewhere. But Jackson Vegas started officially in 2011, and it's taken us this long to come out with a 6-song record. So, you know, we're not the fastest, but...
But hey, all good things take time.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And Jackson Vegas blends rock, folk, soul, and country into the sounds of modern Americana. We've got a little listen right now. Here's Chip Away.
Useful hours passed. I worked through them all, from the first to the last. Oh, I said I'll sleep when I'm dead. So I cut myself into useful bits, then guide where I go and find where I fit. Oh, no, it didn't take long.
You guys sound great.
Thank you.
So who inspires you when you're songwriting?
Well, that song is actually about downtown.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, the entire it's a metaphor of a man restoring a ship, and hopefully to get the ship back out on the sea. But you know, I started with a couple of the folks, the Elbow, the concept of the Elbow, and I really believe in the entertainment culture of Jacksonville, and I've been here my whole life and been a professional entertainer for most of that. And so, you know, the album cover depicts four animals in the corners of the album cover, and those represent our four favorite clubs to play.
Which are what?
We like Underbelly, Burrow, Freebird, and 1904. Those are our favorites. But honorable mention to Rain Dogs, Jackrabbits, and a few others. But
nice. But as you said, the Elbow District. You and a couple of other people created that, and it's a downtown entertainment district.
Yeah, and you know, we've kind of slowed on our proactive, journey with that whole thing, but we kind of set out what we established to do, and you know, with Jackson Vegas, one feeds the other, and you know.
What's the name Jackson Vegas refer to? Is it just your many trips to Vegas? What's going on here?
So we both suffer from and enjoy a specific kind of vibe and attitude in this city of being kind of somewhere between a big town and a little city, and I just wanted to reflect that in the name, since everything that all the material is about here and people from here. So,
well, you're staying true to your passion, because the EP release party will be at Underbelly. Mm-hmm. You want everyone to come out and be part of all the excitement Saturday night downtown.
Yeah, right. And the first 100 people through the door get a free copy of the EP, and we're really proud of it. There's a lot of incredible players. I just have to real fast mention. We have a couple, you know, three or four core players, B, Cyrus, and Ernie are in the group, but we also have extended lineups and family, and there are some incredible players on this record. I was really, really lucky to have these people.
That's excellent. It's Someday is as good as any day. The official release party is Saturday night at Downtown's Underbelly. Come on out and support local musicians. As Grant said, the first 100 through the door will receive a free copy, and you can go to jacksonvegas.com to learn more. Grant Nielsen, such a talent, and thanks so much for being here this morning. Have fun this weekend.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, Melissa.
So that's Saturday night, and there is lots going on all across the First Coast this weekend. Here, as she is every Thursday to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the new communications director at the Riverside Arts Market,
yay!
Carrie Speckman here today. You got a new gig, Spectator.
Because I don't have enough. I need more. It's part-time, so I still have plenty of time.
What are you going to
be
doing for that fine organization?
telling people how awesome it is, pretty much, because it is amazing to me how many people live here and live in Riverside or Avondale who've never been.
That's incredible.
That is a crime against humanity.
I can't think of a better person than you.
Well, thank you. I will personally go to their homes and drag them, put them on a trolley, and get them there.
And make them take selfies with the mayor. You will.
I don't have that kind of power.
Well, actually, you do now. Will undertake any and all tactics to drive attendance at the Riverside Arts Market.
Legal, by any legal means necessary.
Now, when you see Carrie at RAM, you know, go up and say hello.
You can't miss her.
You can't miss Carrie Speckman.
No.
But in the meantime, let's talk about tonight's, now you do write for Jacksonville Magazine.
One of my many jobs.
One of your many things that you do. That tonight is their Best of Jacksonville
Best
party.
Best of Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Yes, they're going to have food from Aqua Grill, like a whole ton of restaurants, Moxie, Avente. Going to have beer from Bold City and Intuition. And it's also the official casting call for the cover model search.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
And where's that going to be?
That's going to be at Everbank.
Oh, that's a big, that's a big bash.
Yes.
Very big bash.
It is a big bash. And I know it sells out frequently. So get your tickets stat. They may not be available at the door.
Wear nice shoes.
Yes. And I will be there personally running the world-renowned shoe cam.
Yes. Your shoes may make it into the magazine.
Mine won't.
Why?
Well, because they're mine.
You've got on your usual Converse.
Yeah, but they're mine. We don't, like, that's nepotism.
Did you get any, humor tips from Elaine Boozler when she's in town this week?
You know what I remember about her? Didn't she used to do that commercial for, I don't remember what deodorant it was, but she'd be like, never let him see you sweat.
I don't
remember.
Was that her?
I'm pretty sure it was her.
She was one of the very first female comics to get a cable special.
Mm-hmm.
It was on Showtime, I think. And she told a few reporters this week they didn't want to give it to her because they said nobody would watch it because she was a woman.
Boo.
Yeah, and she finally did.
Boo-zler.
Yeah, she finally did convince them to put it on TV, and of course it was hugely popular.
She's been around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's at the Comedy Club tonight through Saturday, and Friends of
Never Let Them See You Sweat. You don't remember that?
I vaguely do now. I'm sure I'm going to get a tweet about it.
Ben America will make a meme before the show is over.
So go see Elaine Boozler. And it's a fundraiser for Friends of Jacksonville Animals as well. So Ritz Theater has some really exciting programs.
They are kicking it up.
They are on a roll.
100 notches.
They are doing great. What do they have going on?
They have an opening reception for Through Our Eyes 2015. It's called Wouldn't Take Nothing for My Journey in Artistic Evolution. It's visual autobiographies created by 20 Jacksonville area African American artists.
Yeah, going out and see that. If you've never been to the Ritz Theater, just go by. This is free, by the way.
Yes, 6:30. I believe it starts tonight.
That is tonight. All right. Now, are we going to talk about some opera?
I don't know. Are we?
Is there actually an opera in town?
There is an opera, not just any opera, but Teatro Lirico de Europa.
Very nice.
La Boheme.
I don't think we have any music for this one.
Oh, darn.
But it's La Boheme.
Yes.
None other.
Yes. And that will be at the Times Union Center tonight.
Yeah, that's tonight. If you've never been to see real opera, this is your opportunity.
Your opportunity.
Oh, no. You. Yeah. Now, let's go from that to Phil Vassar at Mavericks at the Landing tomorrow night.
Yes. Phil Vassar will be at Mavericks tomorrow.
I'm not sure if Sean had time to pull music. No, he did not. That's okay. That's okay.
You know what? I don't really know Phil Vassar. So.
Oh, that's okay.
Now, lucky for you, I won't sing anything.
Let's move on then to Awkward Silence Jack's sketch comedy tour at the Five and Dime. I love nothing better than Awkward Silence. So.
Oh my God, I hate Awkward Silence.
I actually kind of like perversely enjoy that.
Do you?
So what's this all about?
I hate it. It's a sketch comedy tour. Pretty much says it all.
Speaking of which, Second City's coming into town.
Speaking of sketch,
the
famed comedy troupe. I love that word troupe. I want to be part of a troupe.
Well, you're kind of part of ours.
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Yeah, you really are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And they're like the big deal improv. They've been around for 55 years. What are you laughing at?
Sean Birch has just informed me that the deodorant commercial Elaine Boozler did was for Dry Idea.
Thank you. Thank you.
So and I don't know, I was wondering.
Do you even make that anymore?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't know.
Bad idea. They should have called it.
All right. We are almost out of time, but let's talk really quickly about a few more news and notes. Atlantic Beach Experimental Theater.
Lady with All the Answers.
The Story of Ann Landers.
Which I think would be very entertaining.
Yes, yes. And of course, she was just a Chicago icon when I lived there. You know, and her sister, too.
Yes, that's kind of crazy. They both.
Yeah, Dear Abby and Ann Landers. They were, and they had this huge rivalry.
And one of them, I can't remember which, made a cameo on the Brady Bunch.
Yep, yep, yep. It very
probably Dear Abby, but they didn't call her that.
That's interesting. And one more note, the Book of Mormon coming in next week.
Wednesday. I'm so excited. This is like the theater event I've been most excited about. It's a big deal.
That
it's
is.
Won like 9 Tonys.
Yeah, the Broadway smash coming into the TU Center next week.
Wednesday, yes.
So keep us posted on your many doings all over town.
15 jobs.
Yes. She is Rams Carrie Speckman.
Oh, Rams Carrie Speckman.
The Riverside Arts Market's own.
I don't know if they want a Mischief of Mayhem on board.
Really? I know. That's exactly what they need.
Well, they knew they were going to get a Mistress of Mayhem. They know me.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to your continued success.
Well, thank you very much, Melissa Ross.
I will see you next week.
Yes, you will.
That's our program, and thanks to all of our guests today. The show's producer is Sean Birch, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. If you miss a program, make sure to just subscribe to our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. And next on Diane Rehm, Senate confirmation hearings begin for Loretta Lynch, President Obama's pick for Attorney General. Some lawmakers question her stance on controversial issues such as immigration reform, marijuana legalization, and trials for terror suspects. Diane will discuss those hearings next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.